The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
It can all change in the blink of an eye. Sure. More good work from him. Here's Jack Grealish playing it in there. And now Harry Kane breaks his European duck. And England are in dreamland.
I think they're pretty excited over there in England. That's a little highlight I couldn't resist. Highlight from the Euro Championships, the 2020 European Championships, played in 2021 because of a year of absolute craziness. Jack Grealish feeding Harry Kane and England beating Germany, and the whole of England just going crazy with delight. Living in dreamland, as said the announcer. These are a few scenes here from some pubs around England following one of those goal scores. Clip two. Actually, I got that wrong. That was England's reaction to Matt Hancock's resignation last weekend. So lots to be happy about if you're English this week. As I saw some of those scenes coming out of England yesterday, it brought back some good memories. We had lots of wonderful memories in our 6 years of living at Edstone. And some of them involved cramming 15 or 20 people into our tiny little living room to watch the English football team. So some good memories all the way around. You're listening to Stephen Flurry, and this is The Trumpet Daily. We certainly appreciate you tuning in. And you can tune in on the CRN Digital Talk Radio Network, Channel 3, on their platforms that takes this program, the audio of this program, right into 11 million American homes. And then also, if you want to get the video version, the live stream of this program in its video format, then you have to come to our website. We offer it there exclusively, thetrumpet.com/live. Plays at 9 a.m. on the West Coast every weekday and noontime on the East Coast, 11 o'clock in the morning, of course, here in the Central Time Zone. We also, don't forget, we have the weekend edition of the Trumpet Daily. That plays on a radio station, KFNX, in Phoenix, Arizona, and also, of course, here in central Oklahoma on KPCG. And we stream it. I don't know if we stream it, but we do post the program on Sundays around midday. Well, lots and lots to get to on today's program. More clips than we have time for, more content than we have time for, but we've got a lot of material, and we'll just get through as much of it as we possibly can. But first, just as a reminder, if we have time, by the way, we'll have some Memphis feedback. Feedback from Celtic Throne, the production in Memphis just a few days ago. That has been prepared. And then don't forget, tomorrow night, we've got one of the final performances for this summer. It's in Tulsa, Oklahoma, just up the road from us. So if you are anywhere near Tulsa and you want to see Celtic Throne live, then by all means, go to CelticThrone.com to secure your tickets for tomorrow night's performance. There's a performance later here on the Edmond campus on July 11th. That show just has, I think, 15 or 20 tickets left, so it's very nearly a sellout. So if you definitely want to go, Tulsa would be your best bet. Well, I just wanted to follow up with the Revolver story. We went into that a couple of weeks ago, Darren Beatty, and the revelation that there were these FBI agents and informants involved in the January 6th protest, actually inciting, in some cases, inciting violence at that protest. All of these individuals that have not been indicted or arrested, I guess they have immunity. He had another piece I guess, that he posted over the night. And it's titled Federal Prosecution of Oath Keepers, Kingpin Stuart Rhodes Breaks the Entire Capital Insurrection Lie Wide Open. And the point, this is just basically more detail, more specifics. This guy, this is the Oath Keepers kingpin. And as Beattie brings out in his piece, I mean, Oath Keepers, they're at the tip of the spear as far as this dangerous white supremacist militia movement is concerned. And we've been told by the fake Biden administration that this is the greatest threat facing the United States today. The threat of white supremacy. And so this Revolver piece asks, well, if they're the most dangerous or one of the most dangerous organizations, and right at the head of this organization is the kingpin, Stuart Rhodes, why didn't he get arrested? Why wasn't he indicted? I'll just give you one excerpt from the piece. It says, why doesn't anyone at the FBI or DOJ want him? Rhodes, that is. It says, if January 6th was an insurrection, why protect the one man who, more than any other individual referenced in the charging documents of the 530-plus open criminal cases, comes closest to the media's ravenous description of a lead insurrectionist? Why wasn't he apprehended somewhere along the way? If this was, in fact, a violent insurrection, well, wouldn't you want to go and get the kingpin, the one leading it? Beattie says, is it possible that the Oath Keepers, the most prominent anti-government group in the United States, has been run, in effect, by the United States government itself, and nobody has mentioned it until now? Is it possible? Is it possible that the government has infiltrated this right-wing militia, even up to the very top, perhaps even this individual, the kingpin, Stuart Rhodes himself? If not, why wasn't he indicted? Why wasn't he arrested? They've got 530-plus open cases. They've got hundreds of people in jail, even as we speak. Some of them grandmothers, because they made the mistake of trespassing for 10 minutes. Why not Rhodes? Well, as Beattie brings out in his piece, he's not there saying, you know, what he did should put him in prison, but he certainly did more than trespass for a few minutes. And you can see it from his text messages. You can see it from his communications with others in this group. You see, on the one hand, you've got the largest, most invasive, widespread investigation in the history of the DOJ. They're covering the entire nation, hunting for people who even came close to the Capitol on that day, January 6th. And then, like Beattie has exposed, Tucker Carlson, of course, has given it an even bigger platform, this revelation. There's something like 20 or 25 that have immunity that haven't been apprehended. Why? This piece at Red State, this is an interesting comparison. Just with respect to these 530 cases and all the people that actually have been arrested, this Red State piece, it goes and compares those who protested out in front of the Capitol and in some cases stormed the Capitol on January the 6th. It compares that protest to those that protested the Matt Kavanaugh hearings back in 2018. And in case you don't remember, the protesters in that case, they did interfere with the hearing. They were roaming the halls of the Capitol. Yes, they were. In fact, they stopped the hearing at one point. Most of those people, they paid a $50 fine, a post and forfeit charge, and then were just let go. Well, that was their constitutional right. Their voices needed to be heard, right? That's what we were told in 2018. The media then, I mean, they had a very different take on the Kavanaugh protests at the Capitol, at the Supreme Court, than what they've had this past year with respect to January 6th. President Trump, if you remember, he came out and said, look, a lot of these protesters in the Kavanaugh hearing, they're paid by George Soros and some of these other far left-wing organizations, and they're coming out here just to stir up trouble. And then you go over to the reporting on MSNBC, or actually I think this might have been ABC, one of the Sunday shows back in 2018. He's on there, the interviewer, with someone representing Vice, the publication. And listen to them talk about how that, well, yeah, some of these people in the protests, they were actually paid. They were paid to cause trouble. They were paid to help create a narrative. This is clip 19.
We also saw people who were organized. In that moment with Jeff Flake on the Hill, we talked to one woman who works for Ultraviolet, who was paid. She helped steer people in the right ways to be able to confront senators.
So there were paid.
There were people who were paid by organizations like Ultraviolet to try to harness that energy in a way that would make the viral moments that we ended up seeing.
Yeah, they were paid by left-wing, radical left-wing organizations to help create the narrative and to steer the people in a certain way, okay? Yahoo News reported about the protests in 2018. Brett Kavanaugh protesters ignore police barricades and occupy the U.S. Capitol. They occupy the Capitol, these protesters. Lots of similarities. I don't think they had a police officer, though, gun one of them down back in 2018. That happened on January 6th, and that's completely okay because, well, I mean, the Capitol was coming under fire. There they are, the friendly banter. Yeah, they were paid. Sure, they were paid. We were trying to steer the narrative in a certain direction. We wanted that narrative to go viral. And then how the story changes, or the approach, the coverage, depending upon the storyline that the media, the propaganda media, want to get out to the general public. This Red State article, it goes and compares, again, some of the protesters from 2018 to today. It says here, the January 6th defendant, Ms. Morgan Lloyd, did not personally engage in any violence, property destruction, or disruption of the Congress. She made the mistake of entering into Congress, the congressional halls. She didn't go into any of the chambers. She just went into the halls. She was there for 10 minutes and decided to leave. And she got arrested. She was detained. She's pleaded guilty. She's now, I think, got years of probation ahead of her. It says, by contrast, the Kavanaugh protester, Dr. Steingraber, actually disrupted the Senate in the midst of its official business of voting on a Supreme Court justice's nomination while she screamed in protest from the Senate gallery. The voting was halted until she could be hauled away by Capitol Police. She was arrested and received a post and forfeit disposition. She paid $50 at a D.C. police station and was released the same day, and that was the end of her case. This is what passes for justice in the United States of America today. We told you the other day about Tucker Carlson, another bombshell revelation, as he took to the airwaves the other night talking about how the NSA is reading his emails, his text messages. They're spying on a Fox News commentator. Last night, Tucker had this follow-up on his program, clip 17.
Now, last night on the show, we made a very straightforward claim. NSA has read my private emails without my permission. Period. That's what we said. Tonight's statement from the NSA does not deny that. Instead, it comes with this non sequitur. In part, quote, Tucker Carlson has never been an intelligence target of the agency. Okay, glad to know. But the question remains, did the Biden administration read my personal emails? That's the question that we asked directly to NSA officials when we spoke to them about 20 minutes ago in a very heated conversation. Did you read my emails? And again, they refused to say, again and again. And then they refused even to explain why they couldn't answer that simple question. We can't tell you, and we won't tell you why we can't tell you. My emails. And the message was clear. We can do whatever we want. We can read your personal texts. We can read your personal emails. We can send veiled threats your way to brush you back if we don't like your politics. We can do anything. We're our own country, and there's literally nothing you can do about it. We're in charge. You're not.
They can do anything they want. Look, they were there, these paid operatives, these radical leftists. They were there to steer the narrative in 2018. You think they weren't there doing the same thing on January the 6th? Revolver has exposed it. He's exposed it over at Revolver. Of course they were there. What is it Dinesh D'Souza said, the conservative commentator? The greatest terrorist threat facing the United States or America at home is the national security apparatus. These rogue agents, thugs with a badge. They're more dangerous, remember? They're more dangerous than the thugs on the street. Because look at how they can abuse their power. Power corrupts. And we're seeing power. We're seeing people drunk on power who are just absolutely, from head to toe, thoroughly corrupt. What a dangerous time for the United States. As I said earlier this week, no helper. 2 Kings 14. God has to intervene. God has to take care of this. All of this corruption. And by the way, you probably saw the story coming out of New York City. This mayor's race where they had 135,000 ballots that, well, they weren't actually ballots. They were fake ballots. They're making some mistakes. This is from the AP. Election officials in New York City have retracted their latest vote totals for the Democratic primary for mayor. They say 135,000 test ballots were inadvertently included in the count. Just inadvertently counted 135,000 test ballots. What does that even mean? Why do you need 135,000 tests? Not 13 test ballots. Not 135. 135,000 test ballots. I don't know what that means. Test ballots inadvertently counted. So consider some of the headlines regarding the chaos, the corruption. Listen to Joe Scarborough this morning waxing eloquent about just how corrupt the election officials are right there in New York City. This is clip 20.
How do these people ever complain about anybody else's voting problems? I mean, New York City, and we've said this for years, it's horrific. It's antiquated. It's incestuous. It's corrupt. I mean, it is just a disaster.
But in Fulton County, it's perfect. All right? In Maricopa County, it's perfect. Election officials in those counties are not to be questioned. Not in Philadelphia, not in Pittsburgh, not in Detroit, not in Milwaukee. But New York, now, it's horrific, says Joe Scarborough. It's incestuous, says Joe Scarborough. It's so obvious. You would think some of these left-wingers, some of these Marxists in the media, you would think that even with a horrific mistake like this, that they would just downplay it so that they just don't look like absolute and total fools. Because you've been saying for 6 months that it can't happen. But this is just the way they operate. If they say it, it doesn't matter if it contradicts or goes against something they said 2 seconds ago. For 4 years, they said Russia helped Donald Trump steal the 2016 election. Then there's that brief sliver in time, November 3rd, and a few weeks after that, everything's perfect, even the audits, the recounts, all of it, everything above board, we checked our work, and it was perfect. And then now you can't even run a mayor's race in New York City. This is just one city. And to test everything out, they ran through 135,000 test ballots just to make sure everything was on the up and up. And then they made the mistake of actually counting them. And you've got all these people running for mayor who are left to wonder, who won? Let's have a redo. And then Donald Trump, of course, on the sidelines, hilariously saying, hey, what's to worry about? I mean, that was cleaner than my election. So why is everybody so upset? Why is everybody so up in arms? 45,000 votes. That's what Biden was ahead with in three swing states that would have turned the election one way or another. 45,000. And yet, if you even question it, if you even ask a question, and never mind the affidavits, never mind the thousands and thousands of witnesses and sworn statements that piled up in the weeks that followed November 3rd, if you even question the legitimacy of that national election, then you're going to be censored. You're going to be deleted. You're going to be blotted out. We couldn't get into it on YouTube. That's why we're not broadcasting live on YouTube anymore. You just can't even bring it up. And here last night, here yesterday, you had these New York election officials in just the city of New York, 135,000 test ballots that accidentally got counted. And so what is the DOJ going to do? Well, of course, they're going to go down and crack down on Georgia and their new laws to make sure that there's integrity in their elections. I think they might want to go and investigate New York City. What a farce. It's just like a circus. A comedy of errors. Here goes Biden's Justice Department looking for some way or another to say that the new laws, and they're not even new laws, they're basically just going back to the laws that were there before COVID-19 blew it all up. COVID-19 and Stacey Abrams and her groups that basically got all the laws tossed out. And now Georgia comes in and they're softer than probably two dozen other states, these laws in Georgia. But Merrick Garland is not going to go after those two dozen states that have stricter voting laws. He's going after Georgia, and then he's using the race card. It's racist. It's racist. Because blacks are not going to be able to vote if they're not able to give snacks out in the voting lines. This was Donald Trump's tweet, by the way, from yesterday. The New York City election, even though an embarrassment and total mess, is far better and more accurate than my 2020 presidential election. So what are people complaining about? What are they complaining about? He's just mocking them. I think my favorite tweet this morning was that Joe Biden has been elected as the new mayor of New York City. Incredibly. Come from behind. He wasn't even in the race, but he won. Well, there's at least a few that are standing firm in calling for a closer examination of what happened, not in the New York mayor's election race alone, but in the presidential contest from November 3rd. Mike Pompeo, he was in a sit-down with one of the cable channels yesterday. Here's what he had to say, clip three.
We need to understand what happened. Election integrity matters. There's not a single person. I've been out traveling the country these past weeks. Yeah, there's not a single person who isn't worried about what happened in this past election. Doesn't say I'm worried about how the votes were counted right. I'm worried that we didn't have something that was really screwy. We need to unpack that. There's no doubt about that. Mm-hmm. But that has a forward-looking element too, because the next thing they'll ask me is, mm-hmm. how are we going to make sure whatever happened doesn't happen again? How do we prevent that?
Mm-hmm. That's President Trump's Secretary of State. And he's saying he encounters it everywhere that he goes. Americans saying, look, that wasn't a fair election. What are we going to do about that? And what are we going to do about it going forward? He talked about this Democrat push to federalize the election, the H.R. 1 and then the Senate 1 bill to try to basically do away with laws and rules so you can have mass mail-in ballots just dropping from the sky, basically. Why do the Democrats want this? Well, as Pompeo went on to say, it all gets down to power. They're demonstrating what they're willing to do to maintain their hold on power. Here's clip four. Yeah.
But make no mistake, they're not going to stop trying. They want to retain power at any cost, and we can't let that happen. It will diminish the integrity that we have inside of our elections were that to happen. Mm-hmm. And that's dangerous. I traveled the world, David, and I watched bad elections. I watched fraudulent elections around the world. And when people don't have confidence, they don't have faith that the election was fair and square, whether they win or lose, they have to know that it was fair and square. If we can't accomplish that here, there's real risk.
They'll retain power at any cost, he said there. That's why they want to institutionalize all of the cheating that happened on November 3rd. I've been telling you I've had this stack of content on the virus and the vaccine and all the cautions that if your eyes are open, the cautions that you're seeing, even from the World Health Organization last week, coming out and saying that children should not be vaccinated at the moment. And I'll take you to a couple of testimonials here in just a second. Tucker Carlson has pointed out the VAERS website, where there's hundreds of thousands. I checked last week, I think it was at 360,000 cases submitted or complaints, basically, from ordinary Americans saying that, yeah, I took the jab or I took the double jab and here's how my body reacted. Some of them were minor reactions. Some were very serious. But as we've been told, the people that actually take the time to submit feedback, it's just a tiny, tiny sliver. It just represents a tiny, tiny sliver of the population. 360,000. This is from CNBC last week. It says the CDC, so that's the Center for Disease Control, the CDC safety group said there's a likely association between a rare heart inflammatory condition in adolescents and young adults, mostly after they've received their second vaccine shot, citing the most recent data and so on. There have been more than 1,200 cases of myocarditis or pericarditis, mostly in people 30 years old or younger. 1,200 cases. Then the FDA, this is just from the other day, on the heart inflammation, the side effect among young people. In the U.S., again, it says there have been 1,200 cases of this among young people, children. Switching over to the U.K., this is a headline from The Guardian. Why most people who now die with COVID in England have had a vaccination. And then the quip underneath the title, don't think of this as a bad sign. It's exactly what's expected from an effective but imperfect jab. So this is normal. I mean, if you ask, hey, I got the vaccine and then I got COVID and then I died, or you're a relative of one that died, then you're told by The Guardian, hey, this is normal. This is perfectly normal. This is in The Guardian again. It says, it could sound worrying that the majority of people dying in England with the now dominant Delta variant have been vaccinated. Does this mean the vaccines are ineffective? Far from it. It's what we would expect from an effective but imperfect vaccine. I mean, it happens all the time. Unbelievable. The New York Times had a story the other day, encouraging teenagers. Basically, this is the New York Times encouraging teenagers to secretively rebel against their parents. Parents who say, I don't want my children to take the vaccine. And here comes your New York Times, the newspaper of record, to encourage teens to go out and get the jab, to do it on their own. Don't tell your parents. You can sneak out. It says here, Marina, age 15, who lives in Palm Beach County, Florida, and who, like others interviewed, asked not to be fully identified, longs for the shot, but her mother says absolutely not. The subject is not open for discussion. It says Elizabeth, who asked to be identified by her middle name, surreptitiously got her vaccine at a school pop-up clinic. And you know, all throughout this article, Alex Berenson brought this out. They never once, the Times, the New York Times, never once says that there are certain risks, especially among young people, if you get the jab. And then you have all these cases and these teenagers that are using their middle names or an assumed name. And where did the New York Times even find these teens? Here they've got reporters out aggressively looking for rebellious teens who go ahead and get the jab anyway. And then the whole tone of the article, you should too. Never mind what your parents say. And then you have, of course, all of the put-downs of these parents, outright or subtly, implying that, well, they're MAGA supporters. They're probably these right-wingers. This is a quote from the piece. It says, Gregory Zimmet, a psychologist and professor of pediatrics at Indiana University, pointed out the irony of an adolescent being legally prevented from making a choice that was strenuously urged by public health officials. It says, developmentally, he said, adolescents at 14 and even younger are at least as good as adults as weighing the risks of a vaccine. Wow. 14 or even younger. I mean, they may have more going on upstairs than their parents. Isn't that nice? So go ahead and get the jab. Senator Ron Johnson, he comes from Wisconsin, and he had this private hearing. You're not going to see an actual official hearing with all kinds of senators and congressmen participating. But he wanted to give voice to those who have had violent reactions to this vaccine, this experimental drug. And, of course, a lot of people didn't like that. Social media and the like. Even people from his home state, the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. It says, facing backlash, Ron Johnson defends news conference with five people who said they got side effects from COVID-19 vaccine. Listen to this testimonial. This is a mother, and her daughter is sitting there next to her in a wheelchair. Her daughter, I believe, is 13. And listen to the mom describe what her daughter has gone through in the last couple months since getting the jab. Clip 7.
On January 20th, Maddie received her second dose of the Pfizer COVID vaccine as a participant in the clinical trial for 12 to 15-year-olds. All three of our kids volunteered and were excited to participate in the trial. We are pro-vaccine and pro-science, which is why we agreed to let Maddie and her two older brothers volunteer for the trial. Upon receiving the second shot, Maddie immediately felt pain at the injection site. And over the next 24 hours, she developed severe abdominal and chest pain. She had painful electrical shocks down her neck and spine that forced her to walk hunched over. She had extreme pain in her fingers and toes. It actually made them turn white, and they were cold whenever you touched them.
These are parents that wanted their children to get the vaccine, and they did. And now this one's paralyzed and in a wheelchair. One of the critics of Senator Johnson putting on this hearing or press conference, whatever it is. It's a Harvard virology professor. Hasseltine also said the Pfizer and Moderna vaccines are the most effective and safe vaccines that have ever been produced. It's far riskier, he said, not to be vaccinated. It just lies. He's an expert, so he knows. It's the safest vaccine that's ever been produced. It's not even approved by the FDA. And you've got case studies just like what you heard there. Agonizing. Here's another one from the Defender. 13-year-old Michigan boy dies 3 days after second dose of the Pfizer vaccine. His aunt says moral, ethical, health questions need answers. A 13-year-old Michigan boy died June 16th, 3 days after he received his second dose. Preliminary autopsy results indicated that following his vaccination, his heart became enlarged and was surrounded by fluid, symptoms similar to those documented in other teen boys, it says. This is from the Daily Mail. Rock musician, 48, died of a brain hemorrhage 2 weeks after he had the AstraZeneca vaccine. The singer, known as Zion, fell ill with an agonizing headache on May 13, 8 days after having the first jab at Penrith Auction Mart and so on. It says a preliminary death certificate cites an irreversible brain injury caused by a hemorrhage, in turn caused by complications of a COVID-19 virus vaccine. Somebody should give voice to this. Congratulations to Ron Johnson for doing it. Where are the others in Congress? Where is the New York Times with any kind of responsible reporting saying, look, we're not going to encourage rebellion. Go get the vaccine on your own. But if you do, at least know this. It can be dangerous for young people in particular. Listen to this. This chief health officer in Queensland, down in Australia. Listen to her. I mean, these are places now that are in full scale or mostly locked down because of a few cases of variants. This is, however, the health official's reaction to whether or not young people should be getting the shot. Clip 6.
I do not want under 40s to get AstraZeneca. We've seen up to 49 deaths in the UK from that syndrome. I don't want an 18-year-old in Queensland dying from a clotting illness. We've had very few deaths due to COVID-19 in Australia in people under the age of 50. And wouldn't it be terrible that our first 18-year-old in Queensland who dies related to this pandemic died because of the vaccine?
At least she's speaking some truth respecting the vaccine. Queensland, the state, has 5.2 million people, total of 7 deaths from COVID. And yet you're still going to find some radicals saying, hey, get the children in there to get the shot as well. Down in South Australia, here again, full lockdown mode because of a few cases going around, and here's a case where a reporter actually challenges the chief health officer in South Australia. Listen to this exchange, clip 5.
You seem to endorse the 80% adult population threshold for reducing the COVID alarm. Doesn't that seem unreasonably high, given that no country's got to that level? We may not ever get to that level. And also, because of the very mild health threat the disease poses to anyone outside those vulnerable groups.
Right, yeah.
You know, there's not been one community transmission that's led to death in this country all year.
I am here to provide information to the South Australian public, not to have an argument with you over a minor point.
Before that, we clipped a part that I meant to play, but she basically said, I can't even believe you're asking me this question. It's so dangerous, COVID. And she wants 80% of the population to be vaccinated. 80%! There's no nation in the world. I suppose maybe the UK is approaching that. But in here, you have all the statistics of how few have actually died of even the disease itself. And Australia leading the way, full-scale lockdown. And then we got to get behind the vaccine. There was a story in the Sunday Morning Herald down in Australia about Clive Palmer and how much criticism he's taken just because he suggested that you don't get the vaccine. This is mining magnate Clive Palmer has been bombarding letterboxes urging people not to get the COVID-19 vaccine and citing discredited figures on the number of deaths caused by the jabs. Mr. Palmer last week sent letters to households across the nation. Well, basically, he's a wealthy man. He's an influential man. He's sending letters saying don't get it done. And listen to this. The Australian government's Therapeutic Goods Administration report confirms 210 deaths and 24,000 adverse reactions after the COVID-19 vaccines. 210 deaths. Australia's a small country. 25, 30 million people. That's it. I mean, this is alarming. 210? Dying from the jab. It says there are over 5,000 deaths in the USA attributed to COVID vaccines, including Pfizer, he said in his letter. The TGA did say in May, this is the article now, the newspaper. So Clive is against the vaccine. Of course, the newspaper is all for it. So it says here, the TGA did say in May that there had been 210 deaths reported to have occurred following immunization, but this did not mean that they had been found to have been caused by the COVID vaccines. You see the reasoning now? Well, just because it happened right after they got the immunization, it doesn't mean it's directly related to that. That's not the way they calculated everything last year. If you died months down the road after having gotten COVID-19, chances are you were put on the rolls. That's a COVID death. So here comes this newspaper rising to the defense of the experts in government. Okay, well, they did admit 210 deaths, but how can we know it came directly from the vaccine? They can't even find a balance. They can't even say, look, we do recommend it. However, you should know there are certain risks involved. There's people, I just quoted the guy from Harvard. There's people that say it's the safest, most perfect vaccine ever made. They actually say this. They say it with a straight face. Never mind VAERS. Never mind the CDC statement. Never mind the WHO even. Never mind these cases. Never mind those people that came before the Ron Johnson hearing. Never mind that mother who is all pro-vaccine. And now she's sitting next to her teenager in a wheelchair. Very sad. Listen to, again, following the logic. It says, sadly, about 160,000 people die in Australia every year, almost 3,000 each week, and therefore it is quite expected that there have been some deaths reported within days or a few weeks of the vaccination. You remember us making this point last year, 14, 15 months ago? We were saying, now look, they're scaremongering and there's also exaggerating going on here. Let's look at the numbers. 58, 59,000 Americans die every week, all right? Every week it's happening. And then we went into the comorbidities and we went into those that were most vulnerable to the COVID-19. And now you have all of these cases, 210 violent reactions, deadly, lethal reactions. And then how many others? 24,000 others that had adverse reactions of some kind. That's just in Australia. And then like Clive points out in his letter, 5,000 deaths in the United States. That's from VAERS. That's government statistics. Shouldn't we just put the brakes on this a little bit, especially with children? At least you have one official in Queensland saying, I do not recommend it for those who are under 40. Good for her. Of course, we don't recommend it for anyone. But in this world, this is a vaccinated world. If it wasn't that way before last year, it certainly is now. Everyone needs to get it. 80% in South Australia. Well, now here's the Sunday Morning Herald coming along saying, you know what, Australians are dying every day, so these really aren't that alarming, these statistics. Where was that last year? It says the head of the TGA, John Skerritt, this month wrote to Mr. Palmer to remind him that public figures have a responsibility to be factual and to not undermine health through spreading misleading information. So he's the problem. Clive Palmer, he's the problem because he has an opinion that goes contrary to what the experts are saying. He's getting letters now from the government. This information, pure and simple, this is misinformation, I should say, pure and simple. Don't listen to it. It's rubbish. That's Scott Morrison. That's the PM. It says in his letter, Mr. Palmer, and while he supported the said, while he supported the use of vaccines that have approval for general use, I'm very concerned by the use of this vaccine on the general population. So here's another guy who's pro-vaccine, just like that mother you heard. But he says, look, this one's in the experimental stage. They're experimenting on us. So I would advise you not to take it. And then he becomes the object of hatred. He becomes the target for daring to stand up to the establishment. This is quite an upside-down world that we're living in. People are just, they've just lost it. There's so much derangement in our thinking. There's so much sickness. I don't have time to get into a lengthy study, but you prepare all of these news items for the program, and you just appreciate, you certainly appreciate the soundness, the logic, the clarity of God's way of thinking. And of course, God wants us to think like he thinks. This is in 2 Timothy chapter 1, verse 6, "Wherefore I put you in remembrance that you, Timothy, stir up the gift of God, which is in you by the putting on of my hands." God's Spirit was dwelling in Timothy's mind. This past week, we've talked about preparation for baptism, what happens then after baptism, after the laying on of hands, after the receipt of God's Spirit. God's Spirit is his mind. It's his nature, 2 Peter 1:4. It's his power. It's his love. It's his life. We certainly need that as we live out our physical lives in this dying world. Paul goes on to say in verse 7, "For God has not given us the spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind." It's God who gives us soundness of thinking, a sound mind, a balanced mind, an honest mind, a mind that's focused on God, on the foundation that is God's truth, the Holy Bible. Everything has to be built on top of that solid foundation, or else the whole structure is flawed, top to bottom. When we come back, we'll conclude today's program with a few emails, and also with the 2 minutes or so that we've captured from the Memphis performance just last Thursday night. It was a relatively small group of 350 people, but as we're seeing with every show on this tour, 350 enthusiastic people. And this will get you excited about tomorrow night's performance in Tulsa, Oklahoma. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. We'll be right back.
The Trumpet Daily. Are we living in the last days? Some dismiss the notion as fanatical, but world leaders and news analysts are issuing warnings that are becoming more and more dire. Could Bible prophecies about the last days actually be accurate? Our brochure can help guide you through the relevant news and history and help you compare these events to what the Bible says. Are we living in the last days? This brochure is available for free right now at thetrumpet.com. The Trumpet Daily.
I love it.
It was pretty good, man. It was pretty good.
I thought it was phenomenal.
A fantastic show. One of the best. Far exceeded my expectations.
Wonderful, wonderful show. It was a Father's Day present for my husband. And now the grandchildren got to enjoy it with us, so it's been fabulous.
It was excellent. Very, very talented group of people. We were just talking about the high production level. Very impressive.
I don't know. We were remarking on, we kind of like the timeline of it, the progression of it, yeah. Kind of from the beginning. I mean, it starts with the 3,000-year, and then it evolves into the America part. And I was actually wondering how it was going to happen, and it was very entertaining.
It's nice how they tied in with other cultures as well. And, young lady who did the solo dancing was amazing. She's a beautiful dancer. So yeah, very impressive.
Oh, it's fantastic. Unbelievable. Just the closeness, the love that you can see in these kids' faces. The fiddler was absolutely amazing.
That was a whole theatrical experience. We loved it.
It was so good. More than we expected. We expected dance. Then you had the music, the lighting.
The storyline.
It was beautiful.
It was absolutely amazing. It exceeded our expectations. It was great.
It was wonderful. Loved it all. It's so much energy, so much enthusiasm, so much heart. Just something that we all need to see.
The show was amazing. It was just awesome, out of control. I loved it. I want to see it again.
We utterly loved it. We felt it was so refreshing, and it celebrated America, and it celebrated our roots. There was just a joy in the dancers. We loved the joy that we saw them dancing with. And I loved seeing the families, because mm-hmm. there was this camaraderie between the dancers. We learned were ages 4 to 24.
Yeah.
And there's several families there, and we started spotting brothers and sisters. And then just to see every age and every level be celebrated.
Yeah.
Like the little children were celebrated for what they could do.
Yeah.
And we enjoyed what they could do. As much as you enjoy the power that the lead dancer had.
I was just so impressed with the positive energy, and just you could sense the joy in the dancers and the singers and the musicians. It was just, yeah, I'd call it a powerful experience.
Audience reaction from the Memphis show little less than a week ago, last Thursday night. It's always inspiring to hear about the impact that the show has on those that get to see it live. I had an email exchange with one of our listeners down in Australia who said that she's watched the video version because she can't make it for the live show, but she's watched the video presentation, I think, 5, 6, 7 times. So even when watching it online, and you can, by the way, watch the online viewing of Celtic Throne July the 11th. If you go to the website, CelticThrone.com, you can get tickets for tomorrow night's show in Tulsa. You can get tickets for the few remaining tickets for July 11th here in Edmond, here at Armstrong Auditorium. And you can, if you're living somewhere halfway around the world, you can also get tickets for the live performance online. So that's at CelticThrone.com. And I mentioned yesterday, too, the college bookstore, Reflections, with an S, ReflectionsBookstore.com. And there you can order one of these Trumpet Daily coffee mugs, or you can get some Celtic Throne T-shirts and other memorabilia. This comes from Halifax, Nova Scotia, this email. It says, your article in the July 2021 issue of The Trumpet called Jab or Else was very interesting. I've been doing some research on the COVID-19 vaccines, and a lot of it was from Dr. Joseph Mercola. Others were Peter McCullough and Dr. John Bergman and Dr. Shiva. These are some of the doctors that we've actually played sound bites from over the years. It says, most, if not all, of the above-mentioned doctors believe people can deal with COVID using vitamins A, C, and D, along with a strong immune system, exercise, fresh air, and sunshine. So this harkens back to some of the instruction that we were giving you well over a year ago. It says here, God gave us an immune system to deal with any virus, and I believe they can't improve on that with man-made synthetic drugs like vaccines. So this follows what we concluded the first segment with. On June 13, a neighbor who is 20 years old advised me not to get the vaccine. He just returned from the hospital where he was at emergency for 5 hours that day after suffering some serious side effects after getting his first shot of the Pfizer vaccine. I mean, these kinds of testimonials, they're just coming in right and left. I mean, as I say, go to the VAERS website and read the testimonials. Read about the side effects. And for some of these experts to get up and say, yeah, it's the safest vaccine in history. The arrogance of some of these people. It's as if they can do or say no wrong. And like I said in the first segment, if it contradicts what they said 2 seconds ago, it doesn't matter. Of course there's corruption. There's corruption all over the New York election officials. But November 3rd, everything then was perfect. It says here, his tongue, feet, fingers were numb. He was terribly sick. He couldn't eat for 2 days. This is a 20-year-old. Got the vaccine, a neighbor of this Trumpet Daily viewer. Says here, at emergency, they informed him that there was inflammation around his heart and had an irregular heartbeat. I will not be getting any of the toxic vaccines myself. I'll take my chances with COVID. Well, there's at least some other people that think this exact way. Certainly those of us in God's family. We know about those health laws that are there for us. Of course, there's sickness and disease that goes around. We're living in a degenerate society, for sure, and there is an element of faith, too, that we have to have in all of this. But there are such things as physical health laws, and that's so much better than anything that man can come up with. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is The Trumpet Daily. If you'd like to submit some feedback to us, we'd love to hear from you. You can email the program, td@thetrumpet.com. We thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you tomorrow.